If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
State player on 720 WGN. So in the mind's eye, old-time radio horror and mystery shows can conjure up the most frightening of scary sensations. From the early 1930s through the early 1960s, radio drama was widely popular in the United States and around the world, with dozens of programs in many different genres, from mysteries and thrillers to soap operas and comedies. The producers and artists that created these audio masterpieces engaged their audience to use their imagination. Now, particularly in the horror and science fiction genres, sound effects and music scores painted general reference pictures on the listener's mind. But it was the listeners themselves that filled in the missing parts of the tapestry. And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to introduce you to three of those most chilling radio dramas ever produced. Now, tonight, we're joined by three individuals whose names are synonymous with the golden age of radio. First is Chuck Shaden, born in Chicago. Chuck's a former newspaper editor, marketing executive. He was inducted to the National Radio Hall of Fame in 1993. He has often served as a consultant on topics related to broadcast history and is the founding member of the board of directors of Chicago's Museum of Broadcast Communications. After 39 years as creator and host of the long-running radio program, Those Were the Days, he stepped down as host in June of 2009. He wrote the Cinnamon Bear book, Speaking of Radio, Chuck Shaden's Conversations with the Stars of the Golden Age of Radio. He was also the founder and editor and publisher of the magazine Nostalgia Digest magazine. Steve Darnell, who began his interest in old-time radio at the age of 12, is an actor, a writer. He's hosted Radio's Golden Age on the web, and he took over for Chuck Shaden's Those Were the Days program almost a decade ago, and 12 years ago as editor of Nostalgia Digest magazine. And last but not least, Carl Amari, who I met over 15 years ago, is a producer, director, actor, founder of Radio Spirits, where most of my old-time radio collection began. He's the creator and producer of the Twilight Zone radio dramas. He's a syndicated radio host and is host of WGN Radio Theater, which airs every Saturday and Sunday night with co-host Lisa Wolf right here on WGN. And he has a new book coming out this fall called The Top 100 Classic Radio Shows. And for the very first time, all three you guys are in studio tonight. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hey. Good evening.
Only one breath, David. Well done.
Wow.
This is a good time of the day to talk about mystery programs on radio.
Right. Yeah. And kind of a tradition here on WGN, because I think it started back even in the days of Eddie Schwartz, where he would have Richard Crowe, the Ghost Hunters, on and play some of those kind of spooky things. I think Wally Phillips used to do some of those spooky airings, too.
Floyd Brown, as well.
Floyd Brown did it every Sunday. I know Wally Phillips used to play The Dark every year, I think.
Oh, that's right. Which is an Arch Obler. It was never an old. That wasn't an old time radio. It was on a record, right?
Yeah,
that he
Drop
did?
Dead Drop was the name Dead. Of the record.
That's not nice to say.
Yeah.
Right? To everybody, come on.
Yes, but what's the name of the record?
That's right. All right, so Chuck, starting with you, how did you find your interest in old time radio? It wasn't old time radio when you were a kid.
No, it was new time radio.
It was new time radio.
It was Chuck time radio. Yeah. And I listened to it on the floor in our living room in front of the Zenith console radio with that flickering green eye, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hooked as a kid. It was, you know, when kids in those days, and this is back in really the olden days now, in the 40s, and I was a guy involved with my imagination. When we played kids' games, we used our imagination. We did all kinds of things with our imagination. I'll be Superman and you be Batman, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so this was a built-in thing for me. And my interest continued to grow, and I found other people who had an interest in it too. And I got to thinking, why couldn't this be on the radio again? So I moseyed into a little radio station in Evanston behind the Orange Crush factory.
That's awesome.
And got myself a gig on the radio. And it was a simple thing, really. The director of the radio station said to me, "You have to produce the show yourself." And I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Well, you got to put the show on the air, but you have to produce a sponsor."
Mm-hmm.
So we found a sponsor.
Which is in, like, the old days, quite frankly.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And the sponsor said, "Well, we'll give you a shot at this. We'll be glad to do this." And so I bought the time.
So Johnson's Wax, what was it? Is it Radiolite?
No, no. I bought the time on the Evanston
station.
That's
right. You did. Yeah.
And the sponsor paid for it. And all I did was endorse the check from the sponsor.
It's transferred
sponsor
right over.
Wrote the check to Chuck Shaden. I wrote the check to WLTD.
Yeah, right.
At that time, that station was WNMP, mm-hmm. and turned it over. And that was the beginning of it. And pretty soon I realized that maybe there was a future for this. And ultimately...
80,000 hours of collection later, something of that matter, right?
It went big, long. we finally had to build on an addition to our house to keep all the tapes that we had. All these were all reel-to-reel tapes.
That's amazing.
And so that's how it went. And it's a lifelong hobby.
Sure.
And
it's a vocation for you.
A pleasant one, yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Steve, what about you?
Well, like a lot of people in this room, I got into old-time radio through Chuck, and those were the days.
Yeah,
and I've told this story before, but it's a favorite memory of mine, that when I was about 12, I was in the car on a Saturday with my dad. He was an attorney and had an office in Franklin Park. And I had suggested we turn on the radio, and I don't know why. It's not like I had an idea of what I wanted to hear. So he turned the dial to what was then WNIB, as long as we're calling up archaic mm-hmm. call letters, mm-hmm. And said, you know, tell me what you think of this. And it was, those were the days, and specifically, it was Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And everything about that was so magical. I mean, the fact that you had a live orchestra, you had a live audience, you had, obviously, sound effects. You had an announcer like Harlow Wilcox reading commercials that were entertaining, part mm-hmm. of the entertainment. And then you had Fibber and Molly, which was that sort of perfect wordplay-based humor for a 12-year-old kid. And as the day went on, I think I heard the Great Gildersleeve. And as the weeks went on, I'd hear yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and Vic and Sade. And I just immersed myself in it every chance I got. Interestingly enough, it was several weeks after discovering the show that I first heard anything resembling radio horror, but I still remember that very distinctly. Arch Obler, who had created the Lights Out series and did the Drop Dead record we were talking about, had done a sort of Lights Out series, I think, in the 1950s or 60s for Armed Forces Radio, and it was a story called The Day Sinatra Got Fat. And I remember this because it was like these two people who
really?
Suddenly find out, to their surprise, that they are growing fat. You know, they're getting, you know, that they can't even read their wristwatches because they're buried in fat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, as I recall, and spoiler alert, that it's some sort of extraterrestrial thing by which they're being fattened up for slaughter.
Oh,
I mean,
nice.
My God, it's just...
Very Twilight Zone-ish,
yes,
actually.
It's
yeah.
It's so bizarre and so gruesome that I'm really kind of amazed that it got on an airwaves at all, but it's stayed with me all these years later, as lot of these shows have.
That's very cool. Carl, what about you?
Well, I was just going to say the Twilight Zone episode you're thinking of is To Serve Man.
Man, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've never heard that. That episode, The Day Sinatra Got Fat. I've heard about it. I've never heard it. Well, my first connection with classic radio was a horror show. It was Suspense on a Country Road.
Yeah,
I was
my favorite.
I was 12 years old, just like Steve. And I think I was 12 years old before you were 12 years old, though.
We can discuss that later. I have a feeling.
It's funny.
And
pretty close. Yeah,
pretty close.
Yeah. And it was 1975, and I was staying over at a friend's house, and we were being rowdy. We were sleeping over, and his dad had some 8-track tapes of classic radio. And one of the 8-track tapes was Suspense on a Country Road with Cary Grant.
It's my favorite.
It's just an amazing show. And I had never experienced anything like this. I you know, here we are in the dark, listening to this show, and as Chuck said, the imagination just went wild, and I had never really used my imagination in that way. You know, reading a book, yes, watching TV a little bit, but you know, the pictures are there for you on television. And so here I'm seeing the people, the crazy woman with the meat cleaver and, you know, all this great stuff.
And you have an image of that person, and you have an image. Yes. Everyone has an image of that person. Yeah. It's all different.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, right.
The woman looks like you with a wig. And it's very horrific. It's very horrific.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. And this was like 30 years before you met him.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really precious.
With a light
Whenever
mustache.
I see Dave, I think on a country road. So then I decided to get, you know, into this, right?
Yeah.
And discovered, I don't know how, but all of a sudden I was listening to Chuck Shaden on WNIB 97.1, I believe it was, right? 97.1.
Yeah.
And I remember Northwest Federal Savings was a sponsor.
Right, right.
And you used to do a, once a month, I think it was a night at Northwest Federal, and you would play a movie, classic movie.
Every Saturday we
every,
did that.
Every
yeah,
Saturday.
Right.
So that got me, and I would come to that, and that got me into classic movies too, thanks to Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck played everything. He had comedies, mysteries, westerns. And so really my love for classic radio was every Saturday from 1 to 5 listening to Chuck Shaden. And so I literally – and I remember Chuck said, "We're going to start this show now, and if I listen out the window, I'll hear a click," which I thought was – you know, it was almost like Romper Room.
Yeah.
You know, Romper Room, I would watch Romper Room, and they would say, "I see Billy," and I see – and then she'd say my name, and I'm like, "Can she really see me?" And it reminded me of Chuck, because he would say, I'm going to hear, you know, because we were taping the show. We were tape recording on our realistic Radio Shack tape recorders when Chuck would play a show. And I remember my brother saying, "Would you go outside on a Saturday? Everyone's outside. You're listening to the Lone Ranger."
Oh, no. Right? How many promising athletic careers were killed in their tracks by those were the days?
So, Chuck, I would be much more athletic if it wasn't for you. I might have gotten, you know, a scholarship to play basketball or something. Not basketball, certainly.
Yeah.
The guy to my left here, maybe basketball. But that's how I got involved in loved old-time radio. I have Chuck Shaden to thank.
That's
for that.
Awesome. Indeed. And then Radio Spirit. So how did that – that started in the basement.
It did.
Down the
in
street from where
same,
I lived.
In that same basement in Schiller Park collecting these shows, I thought, you know what? I want to start a company doing this, right? And so I decided to find the people that created these shows, if they were still alive, or their estates – and was very fortunate to be able to license a lot of the shows from CBS and NBC and the people that owned the Lone Ranger and stuff like that. And then put them back on the air on a national basis with stations across the country that, like Chuck, you know, with WNIB, they, as Chuck said, he sort of bought the time on the air. And, you know, it was a lot like that. It was a barter arrangement. And then I'd have to go get sponsors like Chuck did.
Yeah,
go get sponsors.
Stations.
So we started putting them back on the air. And then that led to other things. And now I'm on WGN with the WGN Radio Theater.
There you go.
So thank you for mentioning that.
You bet. Well, we're talking to Chuck Shaden, Steve Darnall, and WGN's own Carl Amari about Terror on the Air. And there's more after the news next on 720 WGN. Ooh, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. Just in time for the Halloween season, we're talking to Chuck Shaden, Steve Darnall, and WGN's own Carl Amari about Terror on the Air during the golden age of radio. So there were early shows on the radio. First, there was The Witch's Tale, and then others like Beyond Tomorrow, Beyond Midnight, Hall of Fantasy, Escape, Quiet Please, Weird Circle, Tales of the Unexpected, X-1. But the big three are Suspense, Inner Sanctum, and Lights Out. Steve, tell us about Inner Sanctum.
Well, Inner Sanctum started out as a series of mystery novels, and a gentleman named Hyman Brown optioned the name for a radio series. And it's funny because, we've just published an article about the Inner Sanctum show in the new issue of Nostalgia
Digest.
So
I pointed to you.
Well, thank you.
And there's a plug.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, set your watch ahead. And I think Hyman Brown knew two things. One was that to make an immediate impression, he wanted to get as much star power on the show as he could afford. And I think Boris Karloff was in New York at the time doing Broadway. So, of course, he brought him on as often as possible because who else would you want on a horror show but Boris Karloff?
Yeah.
And then the story I've heard, and I've heard different stories, but this is the one we published, so I hope it's right, that he'd had a door that he'd used for the Dick Tracy radio show, which he'd also produced. And it gave
the
off
a creaking door.
A creaking door. Yeah, and yeah. And as he apparently said, the door said, "Make me a star." And my God, he did.
Wow.
He sure did. And and you know, the only thing creepier than that creaking door, which was already a terrifying sound, was the person behind the door.
Wow.
And, you know, of course, and I have to say, one of the things I love about Inner Sanctum is that in terms of the violence it documented, it's real horrifying, some of it. I mean, it's just an endless series of murders, often as not. But I think the fact that you have this host who treats the entire thing like it's a lark, I think that's the saving grace, because otherwise it could be terribly depressing.
Yeah. But when you think about sitting under the covers, as Chuck said, and you're listening to these shows, that's out of your mind scary.
Yes, yeah. And I don't think you would have a Svengoolie or a Crypt Keeper or a Mad Marvin without the host of the Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, a lot of this. I mean, you think about the movies and stuff, but a lot of this started on radio. What about Lights Out? Tell me about Lights Out, Carl.
Lights Out, well, it started right here in Chicago. WENR was the station. And
was that eventually NBC or what?
Yeah, okay, it was an affiliate of NBC. Okay. And there was a guy working at the station by the name of Willis Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And Willis Cooper thought, hey, it might be interesting to play a horrific 15-minute little radio show, you know, after midnight, right at, you know, midnight, and let's see how it works out. And they were like, who's listening at midnight anyway?
Well,
right?
And most people were listening to music at that point, so this kind of broke up they were doing.
Like Chuck said, you know, could work, you know, a scary show in the middle of a rock station or something at night. And so it became a sensation. You know, it was the show, a 15-minute show, scary as all heck. And he would write it, produce it, and then NBC said, look, let's take this show on a national basis. And then it was elongated to 30 minutes at one time, and then Willis Cooper moved to Hollywood to write, I think, The Bride of Frankenstein, some other movies. And then they brought in another Chicago actor, Chicago producer, Arch Obler, and Arch really made it his own. And he wrote a lot of the stories and most of the stories. And it was a 30-minute program sponsored by Ironized Yeast.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, for a while. And I had some other sponsors, I think,
I've got
too.
Some in my office if you need some of that.
I do.
Ironized yeast?
I'm a little run down. some ironized yeast.
Help us with the war effort here.
Yeah, listening to the sponsors in all
great.
Of this is also
it's
cool.
Great.
Like, I love listening to the original commercials and
Frank
all this.
Frank Martin was the announcer on that show, and Arch Obler would introduce it. He was sort of the Raymond on it. You know, he'd come on as the producer and say, oh, this little story came to me one day, and, you know, or it was based on he even did one on H.H. Holmes, Murder Castle, which I know Chuck has played many times.
Yeah.
So he would sometimes base them on fact or incidents in his life, and they were really scary stuff. Lights Out was probably the scariest show, I think. Probably the scariest.
Steve? One of the things I think that's really important about Lights Out, and particularly Obler's version, is that it's, in a way, it's the complete antithesis of Inner Sanctum. Inner Sanctum was this almost cartoonish level of horror and violence. Lights Out, as Arch Obler said many times, it was not about green men from Mars, and it was not about, you know, but it was about the terrors that individuals carry in their minds.
Yeah.
You know, I get to talk about radio horror at libraries and whatnot, and I think the easiest way to describe Lights Out is to say, all of us go into enterprises thinking, what's the worst thing that can happen? And on Lights Out, that always happened.
That happened.
You know, it's sort of like if you wandered into a castle after the museum was closed and didn't know it, you'd suddenly find yourself in an actual 17th century torture chamber.
Wow.
And the other thing, and Arch Obler's, I know you've all talked to Arch Obler over the years, but something that it was really important about Lights Out was the use of sound effects. I mean, that's the show I think that gave us, well, The Dark, of course, the famous one, which is the wet rubber glove.
Still freaks me out.
Spoiler alert,
to that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Not an actual person turning inside out. So.
What?
But, yeah, sorry, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, and this Santa Claus.
You just ruined it for me now.
And when we get to Santa Claus, I don't even want to be in the room. No, but something Arch Obler said once, which really stuck with me, which was when he discovered you could get a certain effect, like the one of the body turning inside out.
Yeah.
He never used it a second time.
Mm. Yeah.
He just did not. That was, I think he actually said it was the ultimate orgasm. But the fact is, it was a high, and you didn't want to cheapen the high.
Yeah. We got to remember, too, you know, when you think about entertainment today, a series lasts 10 episodes, a few seasons, and it's off the air. Like, Lights Out was on, for 13 years and almost 20 years for Suspense. I mean, these shows were on forever, and it was appointment listening when you used to listen
to
this. Chuck, talk to me a little bit about Suspense, because that's kind of the grand show of
them
all.
It is the granddaddy of all the mystery shows, the longest running, 20 years, 42 to 62.
Yeah.
And it had elements of every kind of possible mystery that you could have. And it always lived up to its name. The title of the show was Suspense. And they said these are tales well calculated to keep you in suspense. And no matter what the story was, there was always a degree of suspense until the payoff came just a minute, perhaps, before the sign-off. And while Lights Out and Inner Sanctum had two distinct kinds of formats, Suspense had a little more variety within their framework.
Yeah.
And in Inner Sanctum, it was Raymond, the host, or whoever was the host, who added a lighter touch to it to bring a little bit of relief to the audience. I mean, even in commercials, they had a motherly type woman, Mary, talking about Lipton tea.
Oh, that's right.
You know,
that's
right. Mr. Host, it's a terrible first act, you know. And then she said, oh, what about you? And he says, well, Mary, we got to have some tea now. And even Arch Obler, he took you into his confidence a little bit to bring you into the story.
Very true.
Perhaps more serious than the other show.
Right.
But in the Suspense series, you had everything. And while Lights Out used really well-known actresses from radio and occasionally Peter Lorre or Boris Karloff, and as well as Inner Sanctum would do that, Suspense often used big movie stars.
Sure.
And Suspense, almost from the very first show in 1942, they cast someone counter to the character that they were known on.
Which,
there was a comedian on the screen by the name of Charlie Ruggles.
Sure.
I think he was in vaudeville before that. And they put him into the very first Suspense program, which was called The Burning Court. Now, if you knew Charlie Ruggles, he was kind of a Hugh Herbert type of a guy.
That's right. He's in Bringing Up
anybody
Baby.
In the world remembers Hugh Herbert anymore. But but he was playing it straight. And all through the years, in flush years when Suspense had a big national sponsor like Roma Wines or Autolite, they would always foot the bill for Hollywood stars to appear in roles that were against cast.
Humphrey Bogart, Henry Fonda, Judy Garland, Cary Grant, Maria
Jack
Dietrich.
Benny, Bob Hope.
Well, those were the funny ones. You said Benny and Lucille Ball.
They were not.
They're not
in funny roles.
Yeah, they were terrifying.
And that
roles.
Was a revelation.
Out. Yeah.
It was a revelation when you'd get a promo earlier in the day and say, Bob Hope tonight on the Suspense.
You're like, what?
You say, wow, we're going to hear right here. Let's hear it for her right now. You know, all that Hope stuff. Yeah. Wait a minute. And then he played it straight.
Yeah.
Danny Kaye played it straight. Mm-hmm. Lucille Ball. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there were the actresses who was. Question for you guys. You'll know this. The First Lady of Suspense.
Agnes Moorehead.
Agnes Moorehead, see.
Who was in Dora and Bewitched for a different generation.
I taught these young people.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
We are good students. You are a good teacher.
I was going to say, there'd be no sitting in the corner today.
No.
Sorry, wrong number. Seven times, I think, she did that show, and each time was a live performance.
Yeah.
So, and it was on. And the funny thing about Suspense, it had a great life on radio. Even though it moved from day to day, from time period to time period, it was a series that was owned by the network as opposed to having an advertising agency produce this for the purchase of a radio slot. But they moved it all along, and sometimes it was on a Sunday afternoon, sometimes it was on a Friday night, sometimes on a Thursday early evening. But it always had a big audience, And the quality of those programs, the quality of the stories, the product of the writers never lessened. They were always right up.
William Speer, Elliot Lewis, Louise Fletcher. I mean, these were big names.
You go to the very end of the run. If you listen to the last four shows of Suspense, 1962, nobody was listening to radio anymore, except me, maybe on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. In the Suspense and Gunsmoke were back-to-back, and Johnny Dollar was in there somewhere, too. That was the last of it.
That was it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that program maintained its integrity. The last script ever broadcast was a quality script. Nobody cut any corners. The actors didn't phone it in. They were perfect all the way to the very end of it. So for 20 years, we had radio's outstanding Theater of Thrills. It was a fantastic
show.
And if someone would ask me, Chuck, you've got only one radio series, that's a mystery, and that would include the detective shows and all those things. Which one would you want to be isolated with and you could hear nothing else? Yeah. It would have to be Suspense.
It would have to be Suspense. Well, stick around. We'll wrap things up with Chuck Shaden, Steve Darnall, and Carl Amari, all names synonymous with the golden age of radio, followed by Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon. After the news next on 720 WGN. State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Chuck Shaden, Steve Darnall, and WGN's own Carl Amari about terror on the air during the golden age of radio and the top three horror shows of all time, Suspense, Inner Sanctum, and Lights Out.
The interesting thing is, David, you talk about the big three, about Inner Sanctum and Suspense and Lights Out, and all three of those shows, interestingly enough, tried to move to television. And some
failed.
Of those things, I think, are on YouTube.
They are.
Oh, but man, they're tough to watch.
Yeah.
And I love good television, and I love live television. It's fascinating. But, yeah, it's not.
But it was
anywhere...
something about the imagination. You lost the imagination because you were watching it, right?
No doubt.
They actually did On a Country Road
with
John Forsythe, I think. And John Forsythe is a fine actor.
Yeah.
But you're right. Oh, it just...
No, I want to remember it how I know that story.
It's nothing compared to how it was heard on radio.
That's because your imagination was a key ingredient. You mentioned that before, David.
Yeah.
It was a key ingredient. And the four of us could be listening to the same show. And we have.
Yeah.
And we all have different ideas. If we were to each take some time away from the rest of your program tonight, we could describe the car... In which the couple were riding on a country road.
Right.
And I'll bet you it would be a different kind of a car.
You know, it's funny. When I post the podcast of that, I found a picture, like a Shutterstock picture, of the car and how I remember it. Like, I searched forever to find it.
Yeah.
That's my imagination. It's not yours. It's not yours. It's not yours. It's not anyone else listening. It's just mine. But when I see it, I know that's what that represents to me.
Well, and so when you watch a television version of something, you say, well, it doesn't, remember it that way. Take a good example of that is Fibber McGee's Closet. Not mystery, but Fibber's Closet.
Mm-hmm.
We all watched the junk flop out of that closet on radio, and we all knew what it was. Mm-hmm. But when they did it on a television version of Fibber McGee and Molly, it just wasn't so good. Unless it had been an animation of some sort, it couldn't have possibly have been as good as the closet.
No.
That sounds like a job for CGI.
Had. Yes, it does.
I think the CGI, you get an outstanding Hulk closet.
Well, but it lacks your imagination.
Oh, absolutely.
You see, even with all the movies today, we talk about our imagination not being challenged enough. Every movie that's out almost, when they're using CGI, computer graphics, what's the I for?
Illustration? I don't know.
CG. Yeah. We'll say CG.
We'll say CG.
That's someone else's idea of what it should be. And, you know, you say, wow, I love to see this. I love to see them boxing and fighting and they're floating in the air and they're going over here and the blink things are blowing up and all of that. And the audience sits there and they say, wow, that's great. But they have no idea how great it could be.
It's true.
Audibly.
Yeah.
Instead of visual.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. No, absolutely. That's kind of what you do with Twilight Zone, Carl. I mean, you took things that were really very visual and turned them into a radio production.
Yeah. You know, I... because I'm a huge believer in the imagination and the classic radio. And, you know, Stan Freberg, who was a good friend of mine for many years, and I just got to work with him, and that was like a dream come true for me to work with Stan Freberg. He taught me that same thing. He did that thing with a cherry, you know, the helicopter ringing the maraschino cherry, and, you know, with the radio. He said this, you could do anything on radio. You could do anything, any special effect. And so when I was growing up watching The Twilight Zone, it was great. Don't get me wrong. I think The Twilight Zone television show is one of the best shows ever. But the makeup wasn't great. The you know, the suits on the – you could see the zippers on the back of the Martians, you know, suits and things. Yeah. And so I thought, wow, what if I could take this concept of The Twilight Zone, which was a lot like Suspense, because Suspense had Westerns on it. Mm-hmm. You know, they had detective. Right. They did
variable.
Everything on
Absolutely.
Suspense. Twilight Zone did that. And I thought, this would be really cool to turn – you know, there was all these radio shows that became television shows. Why not take a television show, turn it into a radio show? And so in the CBS, I went to CBS because they owned the series, and they liked the idea. And we did 186 shows over
that's
the years.
Insane.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing about Twilight Zone, Carl's right. It's a tremendous show. But to follow up on what you were saying about – how certain things didn't always ring true. We were talking earlier about To Serve Man. Great episode involving aliens, one of whom is played by Richard Kiel, who is an enormous, enormous gentleman physically. And in the last scene of that episode, and this has stuck with me for decades, he brings the meal to his captive. And then he leaves through a door jamb that is not tall enough. It's like, you built this ship.
Yeah, right.
Why would you not build a door big enough for yourself to go through? Good grief. So this is why I've hired myself out to contracting alien spaceships.
I like it. And, of course, two sponsors, Roma Wines. The two sponsors are Roma Wines and Autolite Spark Plugs. And I think a couple of you know that I've got a bottle. I've showed it to you, a Roma wine bottle.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And I have a whole box, like a display box of Autolite, if you need any.
Okay.
By the way,
what did you do with the meat cleaver and the wig?
I've heard the wine's pretty terrible.
It's gone. Is it really? All right. So the three that we're going to play over the next 3 weeks, the first one tonight is House in Cypress Canyon. Then we're going to do Sorry Wrong Number and, of course, finish up with On a Country Road. So tell us a little bit about the House in Cypress Canyon. I'll ask Chuck first on this one.
Well, isn't that a Sam Spade adventure, more or less?
No. I think there is a character named Sam played by Howard Duff.
Yeah.
He's more on the periphery of this story.
Yeah, but I think that there's an illusion.
There is a sort of illusion to William Spear, who directed Suspense at this time, was also directing Sam Spade.
Yeah,
so it's probably a little in-joke there.
There's some wonderful description in this program as they talk about the house and some of the things that are going on. And, it's one of those shows that you talk about the next day.
Mm-hmm. Water cooler.
At the water cooler, you know. And did you hear that last night?
Yeah.
It is considered one of the classics.
It's Robert Taylor, right? Yeah. Kathy Lewis,
right.
I believe in this.
Kathy Lewis. She could also have been a first lady of Suspense.
Oh,
too. Yeah,
right. She was on more probably than anyone.
Yeah, right.
Really.
So it's a week before Christmas, and they're moving into this kind of fixer-upper. So very topical HGTV. Mm-hmm. They're moving up into a little fixer-upper, right? And things don't go as well as they thought. And we're going to be playing that next. And you can find Chuck Shane, of course, speaking of radio.com. And you've got podcasts that you're posting every month. And then if you like you on Facebook, there's all kinds of memory lane stuff you post all the time.
Thank you.
It's great stuff. Enjoying it. Steve, for you, NostalgiaDigest.com, of course, Saturday afternoons on WDCB. And you get a lot of appearances coming up, too, and you can check those out.
Absolutely. If you go to the main page, scroll down, you'll see I'm talking an awful lot this month about radio mystery and horror, and I emphasize the word lot rather than awful.
Okay.
gotcha. But no, we're at a bunch of libraries in the next couple of weeks. So if you're in the suburbs, I hope we'll see you.
And Carl, of course, Hollywood360radio.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, and right here on Saturdays and Sundays at 11 for WGN Radio Theater. And you do have a new book coming out.
Yeah, I have a book that comes out November 1st in stores everywhere, or you can just go to my website as well. It's called 100 the top 100 classic radio shows. I'm real, real happy with the way it came out. And, you know, speaking of publications and old-time radio, these two gentlemen have a publication. Chuck started it 40-plus years ago, I think, now, called Nostalgia Digest. Yep. If anyone listening doesn't have a subscription to Nostalgia Digest, you should. You really should. And you can go to Steve's website, NostalgiaDigest.com. Check it out, because that magazine comes out four times a year, and it has everything you ever wanted to know about classic radio, amazing articles. And you guys, Chuck started it, and Steve's doing it now, and I just love it.
It's almost like when the TV Guide came when you were in the 70s and 80s. When I see that come still in the mail today, I love it, and I can't wait to crack it open. And there's even some, I think at the website, there's some older versions of the early Chuck days of Nostalgia Digest, isn't
there? In the current issue, Chuck gave us an article about the Memory Club movie series, Night series, which turns 45 this year. Also, I should point out that Nostalgia Digest includes, among other things, the schedule for Carl Amari's Radio Theater.
As well as your show. Those
yes,
are the days.
And if you go to NostalgiaDigest.com, order a two-year subscription, mention WGN, thanks to Carl's largesse, we'll send you a four-CD collection of the Twilight Zone shows he did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This was a feat getting all of you radio gurus into the studio. So yeah, I can't tell you how much
you two guys take cash?
Chuck.
Well, you know, Dave, this was really, really nice of you to get us all together.
Yeah.
It's so
it
nice
fun.
To see Chuck again. I haven't seen him in years.
Thank you.
And this guy, too. And, you know, you guys, Chuck, you really, really, we have you to thank.
We are standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
This is a tribute
really
to Chuck Shaden today is what this is.
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
The tribute is to these fellows who keep it going.
Oh. There
and
you
I
go.
Appreciate that.
Well,
there
you know,
go.
I think without the people who made it happen in the 30s and 40s and 50s, none of us would
That's
be
true.
Talking
right.
about this.
True.
They
That's
deserve
right.
the real thanks.
That's true. Pleasure, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, after the break, we'll present Suspense, The House in Cypress Canyon, next on 720 WGN.